Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of Trib Tower. And, yeah, we're here till midnight tonight. You can hear me regularly on Monday through Friday mornings, overnights, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., and here every Saturday night from 8 to midnight. And if there's a sports event of some kind, like a Hawks game, we will follow it like we did tonight. We started at 10. All right, let's get to the movie reviews. That's what we do here. And if you have a question or a movie comment, 312-981-7200. Time for the movie reviews here on a Saturday night, 312-981-7200. Send your text to 24720 or check us out at facebook.com/Nick D Show. We say hello to Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Okay. Very good.
All right. All right. Well, we always start with the on-demand features. And Eric, we'll start with the Adventurer, The Curse of the Midas Box.
Certainly in the running for the best title of the year.
Yeah, The Adventurer, The Curse of the Midas Box.
Yeah, I'll just read the description for you.
Yeah.
Ancient mysteries, powerful evil, and a fearless hero's quest through the fantastical realm of steam-powered wonders and sinister magic. In the Midas Box,
17-year-old
Mariah Mundys, and that's a guy, life is turned upside down when his parents vanish and his younger brother is kidnapped.
Uh-oh.
Following a trail of clues to the darkly majestic Prince Regent Hotel, Mariah discovers a hidden realm of child-stealing monsters, deadly secrets, and a long-lost artifact that grants limitless wealth, but also devastating supernatural power. With the fate of his world and his family at stake, Mariah will risk everything to unravel.
This is longer
the curse
than
of
this
the Midas
is. This is longer than the Wolf of Wall Street.
It is.
I can't believe somebody has finally made a film about steam-powered wonders.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, I mean, as magical relics go, I mean, it's nice to have a magical box that you put something in and it becomes gold.
Yeah.
That's what everyone's chasing in this movie.
Now, you've seen this.
Yeah.
What the hell, man?
Well, I thought it would be at least on par with the Librarian Noah Wiley series.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a film that is probably the production value is a little bit better than your average straight-to-video movie, but not quite up to the sort of bad quality of a Percy Jackson or a Mortal Instruments.
All right.
It's too bland.
Okay.
Michael Sheen doing ridiculous accents and weird characters and stuff. This keeps you interested for a little bit of while, but when it moves away from the stars of the piece, it's just nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's The Adventurer, the Curse of the Midas Box.
That's right.
Next is Armistice.
Armistice, yes.
Which was originally known as War Horse or Warhouse.
Warhouse.
Yeah, what is that?
Not War Horse.
No, War Horse is the Spielberg movie. War House.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, War House. And this one, the description is a lot simpler. A Royal Marine awakens to find himself imprisoned and forced to fight to the death against inhuman opponents again and again. Haven't seen it, but the funny thing is, it's not the first movie on the on-demand list this week that has that kind of description.
Right. Okay. All right, let's look at this next one. Cold Comes the Night.
Yeah, now this one held a little bit more promise because it's the little twisty little crime thriller that co-stars Bryan Cranston, who I'm always happy to see.
Yeah.
But it also stars Alice Eve. The premise is a struggling motel owner and her daughter are taken hostage by a nearly blind, career criminal to be his eyes as he attempts to retrieve his cash package from a crooked cop.
Huh.
Bryan Cranston plays the nearly blind career criminal, and he has a very, 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 very thick Russian accent.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And
does he wear sunglasses? Does he wear sunglasses and a hat?
He doesn't quite wear the hat,
oh, okay.
But he may as well be doing Walter White,
okay, right,
with a Russian accent. He's like in deep Walter White mode here, and Alice Eve, her acting style is basically she's just not going to smile throughout the movie. And then you got this Logan Marshall Green as the crooked cop, who we've not been a fan of in Prometheus or Devil. This is not a very good movie. A very, very poorly directed, crime thriller that's just of no interest, should be of no interest to anybody.
Okay. All right. I enjoyed Alice Eve in the LeBute movie.
Yeah,
I have to
but
say.
You know, Stanley Tucci really acts her off the screen.
Well, but I actually thought that movie kicked all kinds of ass. I got to tell you, I thought it was great. Colin, have you seen that one yet?
No, I haven't.
The LeBute movie. You got to see it. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Okay. What about this Fantastic Fear of Everything? Simon Pegg's in this.
Yeah, this one's been kind of sitting around for a while. I didn't even know it was ever going to get released. Jack is a children's author turned crime novelist whose detailed research into the lives of Victorian serial killers has turned him into a paranoid wreck, persecuted by the irrational fear of being murdered.
See, that sounds great.
That's a fun premise.
Yes, it is.
That I want to see.
And it's Simon Pegg, for God's sake.
Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Yeah, hope this is a little closer to the good Simon Pegg and not the how to steal friends with
people. Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Run, Fat Boy, Run. Yeah.
Not a good one. All right, what about Free Ride?
Free Ride, based on a true story, stars Anna Paquin. A true story is set in the 70s of a single mom who gets caught up in the Florida drug trade. Her daughter, is trying to keep her daughters in line and, running drugs, through boats and stuff like that, like as a courier. Very, very, very poorly made film. I watched it this morning. A lot of promise, a lot of people I like in the movie. It has sort of a little bit of a twist to the ending. And when you get to that twist, I just kind of threw up my hands in disbelief and went, why didn't you just make a documentary?
Mm.
It has that kind of twist.
Okay.
In the end. It's just like, if you made a documentary, would have been a lot more interesting.
Okay. All right. Now this next one, I cannot wait to see. I'm very excited about it, and I hope I don't get disappointed by your review.
Okay.
It's called Raise.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer for it, and it's just chicks kicking each other's asses. Is what I got out of the trailer.
That's the basic premise.
And Zoe Bell is in it, so that's
Zoe Bell is the star of the movie, and showed at the Chicago Film Festival, actually, which is where I saw it.
Uh-huh.
That's the basic premise, is that a bunch of women, very hot women, are kidnapped, thrown into sort of this underground prison, and are basically forced to fight each other at the whim of the crazy people. It's basically sort of like Mana Tai Chi, but with chicks.
Oh, man. Please.
Okay. Okay. Well,
oh, man.
You getting excited?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tear those expectations down right now.
Oh, man.
Because if this film got released, it would have been on my worst list.
No.
Yes.
Oh.
It is awful, Nick. It is god awful. And it's so awful. It's set up by the very first scene where you think hot chicks in prison fighting each other, kicking each other's ass. How can that be bad? Well, the brutality level on the fights is raised to such a level that any sort of pleasure that could be derived from them are completely shot down immediately.
Mm.
Throw in the fact that it's repetitive throughout the entire movie and that none of the fights are good at all.
Oh, man.
This film is awful.
That sucks. I was really looking forward to watching just chicks beat the crap out of each other. Zoe Bell, man.
Zoe Bell, Tracy Toms, her Death Proof co-star in the movie, Rachel Nichols, also very gorgeous.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you should, give it a shot, Nick. Yeah. Maybe you'll find something in it. I don't think you will.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Damn it. All right. Street Dance 2.
Yeah, this one's got
Colin. Colin, what did you see this?
I knew you were going to bring me into this.
Yeah.
No, I never saw Street Dance 1. I don't even know what. There's a street. It was in 3D apparently, and it came out in 2010.
What?
Yeah. And this one's got Tom Conti in it.
Tom Conti.
Yeah.
What?
Tom Conti.
What is happening here?
He's got top billing here. as Manu.
Oh, man.
Oh, read the storyline, though. This
okay.
is very
After suffering
fun.
Humiliation by the crew Invincible, street dancer Ash looks to gather the best dancers from around the world for a rematch.
From around the world.
Yeah. Got a good looking cover there.
Oh, yeah,
nice
God.
Looking cover.
Wackiness ensues.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Now, we've not seen that one. All
no.
right. So Summer in February is the last on-demand movie. Although I don't know if I want to move past Street Dance 2 right now.
Yeah, especially with this description for Summer in February, a true tale of love, liberty, and scandal amongst the Edwardian artist colony in Cornwall.
Yeah, my butt's already aching.
Snore.
Yes. Dominic Cooper and Emily Browning. Let's talk more about Street Dance and Tom Conti.
Yeah.
This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. All right, you guys hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Those are your fantastic choices for on-demand, if you would like to take advantage of them. Those are your on-demand movies, The Adventurer, The Curse of the Midas Box, Armistice, Cold Comes the Night, A Fantastic Fear of Everything, Free Ride Rays, Street Dance 2, and Summer in February. We will come back and talk about the movies that are in theaters right now. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can send your text to 24720. This weekend, Chicago's Best is headed to Chicago's finest bakeries. Sweet and Savory, Brittany and Elliot have a bite at the best bakeries in town. Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Movie reviews is what we're doing. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join me every Saturday night to review movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can send your text to 24720. And you can also check us out at Facebook.com/NickDShow. And we welcome Colin and Eric back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Hey, Colin.
You.
Yeah, tell us about August, Osage County.
All right. Well, this is based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning play, and it shows its stage roots pretty clearly. Meryl Streep plays a family matriarch who has cancer of the mouth. Julia Roberts, Julianne Nicholson, and Juliette Lewis play her three daughters. And Sam Shepard has a brief role as her husband, whose death is what brings the family together in an old Oklahoma country house where family dysfunction pretty much takes center stage. You know, everyone is accused of doing something awful, either in the past or the present. You know, tears are shed, and it all, you know, kind of builds up to a peak where the fighting turns physical. Quite a cast in this thing. Chris Cooper, Margot Martindale, Ewan McGregor, Dermot Mulroney, Abigail Breslin, and the now ubiquitous Benedict Cumberbatch. It's quite an ensemble piece. It seems like every year, maybe every year, we get at least one little piece of Oscar bait that's, you know, based on a play that has, you know, big ensemble cast. They're easy to produce, you know. You just get a lot of big names, put them in one room, and let them chew on some dialogue for a while, and maybe you'll get some award nominations. Sometimes it works. Doubt, John Patrick Shanley's Doubt, I thought was really good. But then on the other end of the spectrum, you got Carnage, which is a piece of crap. This sort of falls somewhere in between, I think. Certainly these are all great actors to watch, and they're all acting their hearts out. I think the sisters are particularly well cast. I mean, Julia Roberts, Julianne Nicholson, and Juliette Lewis, that's good casting, you know, for that. I thought Dermot Mulroney was pretty funny. But the problem is the material is just so, it's nothing but dysfunction, and for almost the sake of dysfunction, there's not really had a hard time figuring out where it was trying to go. And I'm not sure why this, I kind of just sat there going, hey, how did this thing win a Pulitzer Prize? I guess maybe it's a different thing on stage. Certainly doesn't feel any different when I'm watching this movie. I feel like I'm just watching a lot of great actors arguing over who deserves an Academy Award more for acting their hearts out. It's kind of a mixed review. It's good to see these actors together, but I just didn't think the material really deserved it.
Okay. Having seen this, by the way, on stage, it works a lot better. I mean, I saw the Steppenwolf production, and it's much better than the movie. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, I think I liked it a little bit more than Colin, but like him, I like the performance, some of the performances more than the material, and more so some of the more a little more subtle performances or more amusing performances than sort of the really over the top one. I think Chris Cooper is not getting enough attention for I think how good he is.
I think he's the best. I personally think he's the best thing in the movie.
I do too. Yeah. I do think Dermot Mulroney is very funny in the movie. It's always good to see him play, you know, the sort of this fool that he is in this one. And I think Julia Lewis, I think, does some of her best work.
She's awesome.
In a while. Yeah,
she's awesome.
She's really good.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole time while it was night, like Colin, it was kind of, you know, nice to see actors like this all in the same room, whether they're doing over the top or not. Sometimes you just sort of get caught up in the acting, and I was kind of okay with that. But like Colin is, I was kept, you know, by the end of it, I was kept wondering, like, why is this a play that apparently changed so many people's lives? You can't hear people talk about seeing this thing on the stage or reading a version of the screenplay or the script and saying that this story changed their lives or some way. I don't think there's anything so spectacularly remarkable about it. I think Killer Joe is a more life changing.
I was just going to say, I so yeah. much prefer Killer Joe.
Yeah,
over
I
this.
Mean, at least I have a different outlook on chicken after that movie. So. I watch this thing and, you know, I don't buy into it being anything more than just a bunch of actors getting to act.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm okay with that, and I was kind of okay with that here. But there's nothing much more to it. I mean, it has good scenes. It has some good dialogue. But that's about it.
Yeah, I agree with you guys entirely. I thought the play was good. I don't think this was a play that deserved a Pulitzer at all, in any way, shape, or form. My thing is, it's Amy Morton's role. That's all I'm saying. You know, you got your little Julia Roberts in there. That's fine and dandy, but it's Amy Morton's role, and so I just kept watching it, going, that should be Amy Morton, and then like in the next scene, I'm like, that should be Amy Morton, and that was kind of how I did the whole thing. It's fine. I didn't dislike it like you guys. There's a lot of talented people on screen here, so you're bound to have some good stuff. I just don't think it's that great a play. I liked it on stage, and it was much better on stage with Steppenwolf than it is as a movie, but it's a deeply flawed movie. I don't think it's great by any stretch of the imagination. I think John Wells didn't really do anything but point the camera at actors and let them yell. So, yeah, I'm with you guys. Disappointment. All right, you guys hang on, okay? All right, Eric and Colin are with me, and we're going to talk more movies coming up right after the news, which is coming up next. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower, and we're talking about the movies. It's the movie review time. 312 981-7200. You can send your text to 24720. Colin and Eric are with me, and I welcome them back to the show. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Eric.
Yeah.
Tell us about The Past.
Okay. The Past, this is the new film from writer-director Asghar Farhadi, who made quite a splash a few years ago with the exceptional film Separation. And this film sort of plays like a distant cousin to that film. It's a story of a guy who's coming back see his ex-wife. They're in the process of divorcing, and he's coming back to her home so he can spend the night and then sign the divorce papers in the morning. As he comes back, he realizes that things are not so great on the home front that he left. The daughter of the woman he was married to, played by Berenice Bejo, which just plays the mom, her daughter is not very happy that mom is considering getting remarried to another young man. And there are complications that ensue that regarding why she's not too keen on them getting married. And then so the previous father, played by Ali Mostafa, is there to play, sort of play peacemaker and to try to figure out why she's so upset with this, and whether or not he's possibly not really so much interested in reforming this relationship with her, but just trying to keep everything on the up and up. Meanwhile, the other the third party, played by Tahar Rahim, the other man in her life, he's not too happy, too keen on the fact that the ex-husband is hanging around the household, not too happy that he's hanging around his own son, and again, more complications ensue. Anyone who saw Separation is very clear that Farhadi is not. He's very clear that he's going to complicate matters further while keeping as much information from you as possible. When he did it in a Separation, he did it to an extent that really sort of informed on everything that was going on with what was going to happen with the actual divorce, that was the proceedings that was going on, and this other stuff that was going on that affected how the daughter was going to be perceiving this divorce. Here, it's there are a lot of complications, and there's some very emotional scenes that play out involving the daughter. And I think Ali Mostafa is very good as the husband or the former husband. And I think by the time the film gets to the third act, it gets a little too precious in sort of how much information is being withheld from the audience. There's a lot of sort of reversals and like this person said this, but no, not really. They're guilty of doing this, but maybe they're not so guilty. And I don't think that stuff works quite as much. So like when I say this film is a distant cousin to a Separation, I really mean that in both, in quality, even though Farhadi is very good at sort of crafting a new genre of divorce thriller, which is what this film sort of plays out as. I like the film. Don't like it as much as A Separation, but I do recommend it.
All right. Colin, you talked about this one last week.
Yeah, it was number 18 on my top 20 list.
Yeah.
I like the Separation. This one takes a while to unfold, and I found this film just as interesting and compelling as A Separation. What I like about his films is that everyone seems to have an ulterior motive or motives for what it is they do and the decisions they made, but nobody's made out to be the bad guy. And I like that. I like every character is deserving of empathy and for whatever reason. I think he's a great actor's director. The cast is pretty much across the board fantastic. The little boy here is particularly good. He's a real find. And unlike August Osage County, I don't feel like we're watching family dysfunction run amok. There are layers here, and it's kind of thrilling to see what layer is going to be pulled back next. And I like that Eric, said it's a new genre of divorce thriller, because it is kind of like watching a thriller. Not an action thriller, but the kind of thriller where you're not quite sure, you know, what's going to happen next and who's going to reveal what next. And I find myself hypnotized by this guy's movies whenever I watch them. I don't know. Is it better than The Separation? Is it not as good as Separation? I don't know. I'll watch the two back to back and compare and contrast, but I like this one quite a bit. So yeah, definitely. I highly recommend it.
All right, cool. I've not seen it, so, I will have to make a point of seeing it. It is playing at, the Landmark, and I believe in Evanston, and I believe, wait, let me just double check here. It's at the Landmark in Chicago. And the Landmark and Renaissance in Highland Park. So it's in Evanston, Highland Park, and there.
I'll also say this much for Ferrari. He certainly knows how to hold on a final image.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Very true.
All right. All right, well, hey, Colin?
Yes?
What the hell is These Birds Walk?
Okay. This is a documentary it's about a few people, I guess, but... I'll start with the boy. It's about a boy in Pakistan who has run away from home, where he has, you know, endured a lot of abuse, and he makes his way to a house of refuge run by a man who is known as the Mother Teresa of Pakistan. He basically takes runaway kids in who, have run away from home because of an abusive home life or whatever. And working with him is a guy who has to transport these kids back to their parents once their parents have been located. And it's a risky job for him for many reasons. So this movie, you know, covers the lives of all of these people, and it does so pretty fluently, cinematically, and again with great empathy for all sides of the situation. There's some pretty dramatic moments where you might think that, you know, like scenes that might look a little too staged, but I don't think so. I think if you're young and living in that part of the world and you're desperate, then, you know, a desperate dramatic act is probably not uncommon. I think this is a film maybe I should have watched again before making my top 20 list last week, because when I went back and looked at the trailer again this week to remind myself of this film, because I saw it when we had all those award screeners flooding in, and one of those nights where I watched four movies in a row. And I remembered how involved I felt while watching this film and how compelling it was, much like the past. So I'm eager to actually go back and watch this film again. I think if I did again, I think I might have talked about it last week, because it really is an excellent film, a really tight 71 minutes, definitely worth seeing. It's playing at Facets this weekend, so okay. Definitely check it out.
Okay, cool. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about The Selfish Giant?
Okay, this is a film about a pair of young boys, 13-year-olds in the UK. One of them is very hyperactive, in fact, has to take medication for it. And his best friend is sort of a bigger, stockier kid, a little quieter. And there's sort of the yin and the yang to each other. One day at school, they get involved in some putting down some bullies. And, of course, the two of them end up getting suspended, the hyperactive kid, indefinitely. And they end up going to they're not exactly in wealthy families. They're very poor families, as a matter of fact. So to sort of help out their families and to pass the time, not that they have nothing to do with school, they go to work for this local scrap dealer. Who knew that stealing cable wire was such a growth industry? I was not aware of that. But apparently it is in this film. And so is illegal harness horse racing in the UK. local guys have harness racing down city streets. So that becomes sort of a big part of this movie, as the stockier kid is very good with horses. And happens to, be very good at jockeying when called upon. This is a film that is sort of in the league of sort of like the way that Ken Loach's films are.
But it's a little livelier than that. You got a kid with hyperactivity that's boundless, par for the course. But at the same time, this film really sort of literally shocked me in its final act. It really threw me for a loop on where this film eventually went. And it's not quite as lively as you might hope for. This is a film that sort of really tells you that, the poor, the lower class, not everything is going to evolve into a Hollywood movie for them. It's a pretty strong picture. It's 90 minutes. It's funny. It's energetic at times. It's not completely a downer, but it's a film that will sort of make you realize that not everyone is going to have a happy ending.
Okay, that's The Selfish Giant. Where's that playing?
Music Box.
Music Box. It's at the Music Box right now. Okay. All right. Cool. All right. We got one more movie to talk about. I did not get to see my boy's movie. My boy Rennie. Hercules, The Legend Begins.
Yeah.
If anybody saw Hercules, The Legend Begins, you can call us at 312-981-7200. Now, you all know how I feel about Rennie Harlan.
Mm-hmm.
I like him so much, I enjoyed Mindhunters. That's how much I like Rennie Harlan. But this movie looks terrible.
Yeah. If you saw Legend of Hercules but did not see her, don't call in, because I will make fun of you.
As far as I'm concerned, there's only one Hercules, and that's Lou Ferrigno. Those are the finest. Those are the two finest films ever made.
Okay.
Have you guys seen the Hercules and Hercules 2?
Of course.
They're fantastic. Yeah. Those are two of the greatest worst movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you the number of times that my friends and I enjoyed alcoholic beverages while watching both of those Hercules movies and laughing our asses off. I can't even explain to you how funny those movies are. If you've not seen the Hercules movies with Lou Ferrigno, they're pretty special. Oh, my God. All right, you guys, hang on. And when we come back, we'll talk about Lone Survivor, which is the other big one that opened up this week. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. And if you saw the Hercules movie, give us a call. All right, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till midnight, the lovely, very lovely Amy Guth will take over at midnight for Red Eye Remix. And Colin and Eric are with me right now, and we're talking about the new movies. And Colin?
Yep.
What the hell, man? Tell us about Lone Survivor.
All right. Well, this is based on a true story of a Navy SEAL's mission to capture a... high-ranking Taliban leader. Mark Wahlberg plays the leader of this mission, which, unlike Zero Dark Thirty, did not go according to plan. The boys, about halfway through this thing, the boys have a decision to make as to where to go next or what action to take, and it's a decision that ends up costing many lives. From there, the movie focuses largely... On the brutality of the combat, and it is indeed painful to watch. Wahlberg, of course, survives the battle, in case the poster didn't give it away, but just barely, and ends up trying to survive the rough terrains of Afghanistan on his own, and eventually runs into some people, give him a helping hand, but. So this is from director Peter Berg, who I thought made a great movie, Friday Night Lights, back in 2004, but has kind of been on a downward spiral since. And I thought maybe this one he would, as this one got going, I thought maybe he was getting back to form, getting back to, what he accomplished with that film. You know, it's got a bunch of guys who are all going to be, you know, working together on this one mission. And the movie definitely has a streak of nobility running all the way through it. It is definitely a movie that wants to honor these men and what they do and what they did. But he really shortchanges the characters here. There aren't really any interesting characters here. You know, unlike Friday Night Lights, where, you know, we had a lot of characters that were really worth getting emotionally invested in, and that by the end you feel like you really knew them. By the end of this movie, I couldn't really remember anybody. I didn't really know what they were about or what, you know, sacrifices they had made. I mean, a few things here and there, but definitely nothing, you know, that would make me think, wow, that seems like a really interesting person. I'm glad I, you know, got to know that person in some way from watching this film. This movie is mostly about Wahlberg and the brutality of combat, which I will say, very well done, very hard to watch. I winced quite a bit. And I think that's the strength of the movie right there, is the technical skill behind it. But as far as the characters go, it's pretty empty. Okay. So can't quite recommend it.
All right, Eric.
Yeah, Colin's absolutely right. I mean, the thing about reviewing this movie is that technically it's very well made when it gets to the crux of what this, you know, what it really wants to do, which is really to sort of get you to this brutality and this bloodshed that comes about because of this failed mission. You know, it's sort of a minuscule way, you know, version of Black Hawk Down in that manner. But the big sort of overwhelming problem with the film, not just, you know, that we don't really get to know these characters, but, you know, we've had a lot of stories that are sort of, you know, the movies about, you know, the fighting for the guy next to you. We've heard those stories before. And the question that I had at the end of this one is, why this story? Why did this story have to be told, other than the fact that the one guy ended up writing a book and it was available? There are probably countless stories out there that are probably, maybe more important, maybe less important. I don't know. But the manner and the way this thing is told, the middle crux of this movie, in a way, is kind of like, you know, watching Passion of the Christ, in a way. It's, you know, it's basically just watching, our boys being cut to pieces. And it is hard to watch. And it's successful on that level. But at the end of the day, you know, the sort of the bookends of this thing where these guys are propped up to be superhuman, and it makes you wonder, just kind of like, is the movie, you know, trying to reach out and, you know, because the movie has no context of what this mission really was, other than really kind of basically just revenge, which is at the Zero Dark Thirty, you know, sort of danced around that a little bit better. But this movie has no context about the war, so we don't really know what these guys are fighting for. And sometimes that works, but in the context of this one, I want to know why this story. And if someone can answer that for me, you know, I'll have that discussion. But it's kind of a near miss for me, too.
I thought it was a mess. I think Peter Berg's only made one good movie, and that's Friday Night. I actually liked
Rundown.
The Rundown was fun.
Yeah.
But outside of that, the guy's not made any good movies. This seems consistent. What was that stupid movie he made? Jason Bateman was in it. Which one?
Hancock?
No, not Hancock.
Kingdom.
Oh, God. This movie reminded me of Kingdom in terms of style. I just thought it was an absolute mess. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here that's really hard to watch and brutal. I wasn't quite sure why, why it went the route it went. Wahlberg is doing a lot of promotion for this movie, saying it's the most important movie he's ever made. And there's no question that everybody involved, the cast, the crew, the director, all have respect for these guys and have nothing but, are acknowledging what a great job these guys do. But I just thought this was a really uncompelling movie. Some of it is technically well done. A lot of it is brutal and hard to watch. But ultimately, when it was all over, it just left me cold. You know, when it was done, I was like, I don't care. So, yeah, I just not a good one. All right, what do we got next week, guys?
We got, I'll be at Sundance.
Oh, yes. Okay, so we'll get to report some Sundance.
Yeah, and Devil's Due opens next week, and Ride Along with Kevin Hart and Ice Cube.
God, it's
January. And Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit.
Yeah, it's January, isn't it?
It is January.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I will talk to you guys soon. Eric, have a great trip, and we'll talk to you from Sundance, okay?
Thank you. Talk
All
to you
right, now. You guys. See you later.
Alrighty.
There's Eric and Colin.